of a razor? His shackled hands went to his freshly shaved jaw. Jesper did it. Jesper must have seen to Matthias's hair, too. The tufts of blonde that had grown raggedly from his scalp had been trimmed down. It was still too short, bare golden fuzz over skin that showed cuts and bruises from his last fight in Hellgate. He must be happy to be free of the beard, though, Nina thought. Until Adruskella had accomplished a mission on his own and had been granted officer status, he was required to remain clean-shaven. If Matthias had brought Nina to face trial at the Ice Court, he would have been granted that permission. He would have worn the silver wolf's head that marked an officer of the Druskella. It made her sick to think of it. Congratulations on your recent advancement to murderer of rank. The thought helped remind her just who she was dealing with. She sat up straighter, chin lifting.
J'ai marden, Matthias, she asked.
Don't,
he said. You'd prefer I spoke Kirch.
I don't want to hear my language from your mouth.
His eyes flicked to her lips, and she felt an unwelcome flush. With vindictive pleasure, she said in Fjerdan,
But you always liked the way I spoke your tongue. You said it sounded pure.
It was true. He'd loved her accent, the vowels of a princess, courtesy of her teachers at the little palace.
Don't press me, Nina,
he said. Matthias's Kirch was ugly, brutal, the guttural accent of thieves and murderers that he'd met in prison.
That pardon is a dream that's hard to hold on to. The memory of your pulse fading beneath my fingers is far easier to bring to mind.
Try me, she said, her anger flaring. She was sick of his threats.
My hands aren't pinned now, Helvar.
She curled her fingertips, and Matthias gasped as his heart began to race.
Witch,
he spat, clutching his chest. Surely you can do better than that. You must have 100 names for me by now.
1,000,
he grunted, as sweat broke out on his brow. She relaxed her fingers, feeling suddenly embarrassed. What was she doing? Punishing him? Toying with him? He had every right to hate her.
Go away, Matthias. I have a patient to see to.
She focused on checking Inej's body temperature.
Will she live?
Do you care?
Of course I care. She's a human being.
She heard the unspoken end to that sentence. She's a human being, unlike you. The Fjerdans didn't believe the Grisha were human. They weren't even on par with animals, but something low and demonic. A blight on the world. An abomination. She lifted a shoulder.
I don't know. Really. I did my best, but my gifts lie elsewhere.
Kaz asked you if the White Rose would send a delegation to Hrimkala.
You know the White Rose?
West Stave is a favorite subject of conversation in Hellgate.
Nina paused. Then, without saying a word, she pushed up the sleeve of her shirt. Two roses intertwined on the inside of her forearm. She could have explained what she'd done there, that she'd never made her living on her back. But it was none of his business what she did or didn't do. Let him believe what he liked.
You chose to work there?
Chose is a bit of a stretch, but yes.
Why? Why would you remain in Kirch?
She rubbed her eyes. I couldn't leave you in Hellgate.
You put me in Hellgate.
It was a mistake, Matthias. Rage ignited in his eyes, the calm veneer dropping away.
A mistake? I saved your life and you accused me of being a slaver.
Yes, Nina said, and I've spent most of this last year trying to find a way to set things right.
Has a true word ever left your lips?
She sagged back wearily in her chair.
I've never lied to you. I never will.
The first words you said to me were a lie, spoken in Kalish, as I recall.
Spoken right before you captured me and stuffed me in a cage. Was that the time for speaking truths?
I shouldn't blame you. You can't help yourself. It's your nature to dissemble.
He peered at her neck.
Your bruises are gone.
I removed them. Does that bother you?
Matthias said nothing, but she saw a glimmer of shame move over his face. Matthias had always fought his own decency. To become a Druskeller, he'd had to kill the good things inside him. But the boy he should have been was always there, and she'd begun to see the truth of him in the days they'd spent together after the shipwreck. She wanted to believe that boy was still there, locked away, despite her betrayal and whatever he'd endured at Hellgate. Looking at him now, she couldn't be sure. Maybe this was the truth of him, and the image she'd held on to this last year had been an illusion.
I need to see to Inej, she said, eager to have him gone.
He didn't leave. Instead, he said,
Did you think of me at all, Nina? Did I trouble your sleep?
She shrugged. A Corporalnik can sleep whenever she likes, though she couldn't control her dreams.
Sleep is a luxury at Hellgate. It's a danger. But when I slept, I dreamed of you.
Her head snapped up.
That's right,
he said.
Every time I closed my eyes.
What happened in the dreams?
She asked, eager for an answer, but fearing it too.
Horrible things. The worst kinds of torture. You drowned me slowly. You burned my heart from my chest. You blinded me.
I was a monster.
A monster, a maiden, a sylph of the ice. You kissed me, whispered stories in my ear. You sang to me and held me as I slept. Your laugh chased me into waking.
You always hated my laugh.
I loved your laugh, Nina, and your fierce warrior's heart. I might have loved you, too.
Might have. Once.
Before she had betrayed him. Those words carved an ache into her chest. She knew she shouldn't speak, but she couldn't help herself.
And what did you do, Matthias? What did you do to me in your dreams?
The ship listed gently. The lantern swayed. His eyes were blue fire.
Everything,
he said as he turned to go.
Everything.
15. Matthias. When he emerged on deck, Matthias had to head straight for the railing. All of these canal rats and slum dwellers had easily found their sea legs, used to hopping from boat to boat on the waterways of Ketterdam. Only the soft one, Wylan, seemed to be struggling. He looked as poorly as Matthias felt. It was better in the fresh air, where he could keep an eye on the horizon. He'd managed sea voyages as a Druskeller, but he'd always felt more comfortable on land, on the ice. It was humiliating to have these foreigners see him vomit over the railing for the third time in as many hours. At least Nina wasn't here to witness that particular shame. He kept thinking of her in that cabin, ministering to the bronze girl, all concern and kindness and fatigue. She looked so weary. It was a mistake, she'd said. To have him branded as a slaver, tossed onto a Kerch ship, and thrown in jail? She claimed she'd tried to set things right. But even if that were true, what did it matter? Her kind had no honor. She'd proven that. Someone had brewed coffee, and he saw the crew drinking it from copper mugs with ceramic lids. The thought to bring Nina a cup entered his head, and he crushed it. He didn't need to tend to her or tell Brekker that she could use relief. He clenched his fingers, looking at the scabbed knuckles. She had seated such weakness in him. Brekker gestured Matthias over to where he, Jasper, and Wylan had gathered on the forecastle deck to examine plans of the ice court away from the eyes and ears of the crew. The sight of those drawings was like a knife to his heart. The walls, the gates, the guards. They should have dissuaded these fools, but apparently he was as much a fool as the rest of them.
Why aren't there names on anything? Brekker asked, gesturing at the plans.
I don't know Fjärden, and we need the details right, Wylan said. Helvar should do it. He drew back when he saw Matthias's expression. I'm just doing my job. Stop glaring at me. No, Matthias growled.
Here,
Kaz said, tossing him a tiny, clear disc that winked in the sun. The demon had propped himself on a barrel and was leaning against the mast, his bad leg elevated on a coil of rope, that cursed walking stick resting on his lap. Matthias liked to imagine breaking it into splinters and feeding them to Brekker, one by one.
What is it? One of Rask's new inventions.
Weiland's head popped up.
I thought he did demo work.
He does everything, said Jesper. Wedge it between your back teeth, Kaz said as he handed the discs to the others. But don't bite down.
Weiland started to sputter and cough, clawing at his mouth. A transparent film had spread over his lips. It bulged like a frog's gullet as he tried to breathe, eyes darting left and right in panic. Jesper started laughing, and Kaz just shook his head.
I told you not to bite down, Weiland. Breathe through your nose.
The boy took deep inhales, nostrils flaring.
Easy, said Jesper. You're going to make yourself pass out.
What is this? Asked Matthias, still holding the tiny disc in his palm. Kaz pushed his deep into his mouth, wiggling it between his teeth.
Baleen, I planned to save these, but after that ambush, I don't know what kind of trouble we may run into on the open sea. If you go over and can't come up for air, wiggle it free and bite down. It will buy you 10 minutes of breathing time. Less if you panic, he said with a meaningful look at Weiland.
He gave the boy another piece of baleen.
Be careful with that one.
Then he tapped the ice court plans.
Names, Helvar. All of them.
Reluctantly, Matthias picked up the pen and ink Weiland had laid out and began to scratch in the names of the buildings and surrounding roads. Somehow, doing it himself felt even more treasonous. Part of him wondered if he could simply find a way to separate from the group once they got there, reveal their location, and thereby win his way back into the good graces of his government. Would anyone at the ice court even recognize him? He was probably believed to be dead, drowned in the shipwreck that had killed his closest friends and Commander Brum. He had no proof of his true identity. He would be a stranger who had no business in the ice court, and by the time he got anyone to listen...
You're holding back,
Brekker said, his dark eyes trained on Matthias. Matthias ignored the shiver that passed through him. Sometimes it was like the demon could read minds.
I'm telling you what I know. Your conscience is interfering with your memory. Remember the terms of our deal, Helvar.
All right, Matthias said, his anger rising.
You want my expertise? Your plan won't work. You don't even know my plan.
In through the prison, out through the embassy?
As a start.
It can't be done. The prison sector is completely isolated from the rest of the ice court. It isn't connected to the embassy. There's no way to reach it from there.
It has a roof, doesn't it?
You can't get to the roof, Matthias said with satisfaction.
The Druskel spend 3 months working with Grisha prisoners and guards as part of our training. I've been in the prison, and there's no access to the roof for exactly that reason. If someone manages to get out of his cell, we don't want him running around the ice court. The prison is totally sealed off from the other two sectors in the outer circle. Once you're in, you're in.
There's always a way out.
Kaz pulled the prison plan from the stack.
5 floors, right? Processing area and 4 levels of cells.
So what's here? In the basement?
Nothing. A laundry and the incinerator.
The incinerator?
Yes, where they burn the convicts' clothes when they arrive. It's a plague precaution, but... As soon as the words left Matthias' mouth, he understood what Brekker had in mind.
Sweet Joe. You want us to climb 6 stories up an incinerator shaft?
When does the incinerator run?
If I remember right, early morning, but even without the heat, we...
He doesn't mean for us to climb it, said Nina, emerging from below decks.
Kaz sat up straighter.
Who's watching Inej?
Roddy, she said. I'll go back in a minute. I just needed some air. And don't feign concern for Inej when you're planning to send her climbing up 6 stories of chimney with only a rope and a prayer.
The Wraith can manage it.
The Wraith is a 16-year-old girl currently lying unconscious on a table. She may not even survive the night.
She will, said Kaz, and something savage flashed in his eyes. Matthias suspected that Brekker would drag the girl back from hell himself if he had to. Jesper picked up his rifle, running a soft cloth over it.
Why are we talking about scaling chimneys when we've got a bigger problem?
And what's that? Kaz asked, though Matthias had the distinct impression he knew.
We have no business going after Bol Yul Bayur if Pekka Rollins is involved.
Who is Pekka Rollins? Matthias asked, turning the ridiculous syllables over in his mouth. Kirch names had no dignity to them. He knew that the man was a gang leader and that he lined his pockets with proceeds from the Hell Show. That was bad enough, but Matthias sensed there was more. Weiland shuddered, pulling at the gummy substance on his lips.
Only the biggest, baddest operator in all of Ketterdam. He has money we don't have, connections we don't have, and probably a head start.
Jesper nodded.
For once, Weiland is making sense.
If by some miracle we do manage to spring Bo Yul Bayur before Rollins does, once he finds out we're the ones who beat him to it, we're all dead men.
Pekka Rollins is a barrel boss, Kaz said. No more, no less. Stop making him out to be some kind of immortal.
There's something else going on here, thought Matthias. Brekker had lost the thrum of violence that seemed to drive him earlier, when he'd murdered Umin. But there was still a lingering intensity in his words. Matthias felt sure that Kaz Brekker hated Pekka Rollins, and it wasn't just because he'd blown up their ship and hired thugs to shoot at them. This had the feel of old wounds and bad blood.
Jesper leaned back and said,
You think Per Haskell is going to back you when he finds out you crossed Pekka Rollins? You think the old man wants that war?
Kaz shook his head, and Matthias saw real frustration there.
Pekka Rollins didn't come into this world dressed in velvet and rolling in Kruger. You're still thinking small, the way Per Haskell does, the way men like Rollins want you to. We pull off this job and divvy up that hall, we'll be the legends of the barrel. We'll be the crew that beat Pekka Rollins.
Maybe we should forget approaching from the north, said Weiland. If Pekka's crew has a head start, we should sail straight to Jerholm.
The harbor will be crawling with security, Kaz said. Not to mention all the usual customs agents and lawmen.
The south? Through Rovka?
That border is locked down tight,
Nina said. It's a big border, said Matthias.
But there's no way to know where it's most vulnerable, she replied, unless you have some magical knowledge about which watchtowers and outposts are active. Besides, if we enter from Rovka, we have to contend with Rovkans and Fjerdans.
What she said made sense, but it unnerved him. In Fjerda, women didn't talk this way, didn't speak of military or strategic matters. But Nina had always been like that.
We enter from the north as planned, Kaz said.
Jesper knocked his head against the hull and cast his eyes heavenward.
Fine, but if Pekka Rollins kills us all, I'm going to get Weiland's ghost to teach my ghost how to play the flute, just so that I can annoy the hell out of your ghost.
Brekker's lips quirked.
I'll just hire Matthias' ghost to kick your ghost's ass.
My ghost won't associate with your ghost, Matthias said primly, and then wondered if the sea air was rotting his brain.
Part 3. Heartsick. 16. Inej. Everything hurt. And why was the room moving? Inej came awake slowly, her thoughts jumbled. She remembered the thrust of Uman's knife, climbing the crates, people shouting as she dangled from the tips of her fingers.
Come on down, Wraith.
But Kaz had returned for her, to rescue his investment. They must have made it onto the Farrowland. She tried to roll over, but the pain was too intense, so she settled for turning her head. Nina was drowsing on a stool tucked into the corner by the table. Inej's hand grasped loosely in her own. Nina, she croaked. Her throat felt like it was coated in wool. Nina jolted awake. I'm up, she blurted, then peered blearily at Inej. You're awake, she sat up straighter. Oh, saints, you're awake! And then Nina burst out crying. Inej tried to sit up, but she could barely lift her head. No, no, Nina said. Don't try to move, just rest. Are you okay? Nina started to laugh through her tears. I'm fine. You're the one who got stabbed. I don't know what's wrong with me. It's just so much easier to kill people than take care of them. Inej blinked, and then they both started laughing. Ow, groaned Inej. Don't make me laugh. That feels awful. Nina winced. How do you feel? Sore, but not terrible. Thirsty. Nina offered her a tin cup full of cold water. It's fresh. We had rain yesterday. Inej sipped carefully, letting Nina hold her head up. How long was I out? 3 days. Almost four. Jesper is driving us all crazy. I don't think I've seen him sit still for more than 2 minutes together. She stood up abruptly. I need to tell Kaz you're awake. We thought... Wait, Inej said, grabbing for Nina's hand. Just... Can we not tell him right away? Nina sat back down, her face puzzled. Sure, but... Just for tonight, she paused. Is it night? Yes. Just past midnight, actually. Do we know who came after us at the harbor? Pekka Rollins. He hired the Black Tips and the Razor Gulls to keep us from getting out of Fifth Harbor. How did he know where we were leaving from? We're not sure yet. I saw Uman. Uman's dead. Kaz killed him. He did? Kaz killed a lot of people. Roddy saw him go after the Black Tips who had you up on the crates. I believe his exact words were, there was enough blood to paint a barn red. Inej closed her eyes. So much death. They were surrounded by it in the barrel, but this was the closest it had ever come to her. He was afraid for you. Kaz isn't afraid of anything. You should have seen his face when he brought you to me. I'm a very valuable investment. Nina's jaw dropped. Tell me he didn't say that. Of course he did. Well, not the valuable part. Idiot. How's Matthias? Also an idiot. Do you think you can eat? Inej shook her head. She didn't feel hungry at all. Try, urged Nina. There wasn't much of you to begin with. I just want to rest for now. Of course, Nina said. I'll turn down the lantern. Inej reached for her again. Don't. I don't want to go back to sleep yet. I could read to you if I had anything to read. There's a heartrender at the Little Palace who can recite epic poetry for hours. Then you'd wish you had died. Inej laughed and then winced. Just stay. All right, said Nina. Since you want to talk, tell me why you don't have a cup and a crow on your arm. Starting with the easy questions? Nina crossed her legs and planted her chin in her hands. Waiting. Inej was quiet for a while. You saw my scars. Nina nodded. When Kaz got Per Haskell to pay off my indenture with the menagerie, the first thing I did was have the peacock feather tattoo removed. Whoever took care of it did a pretty rough job. He wasn't a corporalnik, or even a medic. Just one of the half-knowledgeable butchers who plied their trade along the desperate of the barrel. He'd offered her a slug of whiskey, then simply hacked away at the skin, leaving a puckered spill of wounds down her forearm. She hadn't cared. The pain was liberation. They had loved to talk about her skin at the House of Exotics. It was like coffee with sweet milk. It was like burnished caramel. It was like satin. She welcomed every cut of the knife and the scars it left behind. Kaz told me I didn't have to do anything but make myself useful. Kaz had taught her to crack a safe, pick a pocket, wield a knife. He'd gifted her with her first blade, the one she called Sankt Peter. Not as pretty as wild geraniums, but more practical, she supposed. Maybe I'll use it on you, she'd said. He'd sighed. If only you were that bloodthirsty. She hadn't been able to tell if he was kidding. Now she shifted slightly on the table. There was pain, but it wasn't too bad. Given how deep the knife had gone, her saints must have been guiding Nina's hand. Kaz said, if I proved myself, I could join the dregs when I was ready. And I did. But I didn't take the tattoo. Nina's brows rose. I didn't think it was optional. Technically it isn't. I know some people don't understand, but Kaz told me. He said it was my choice, that he wouldn't be the one to mark me again. But he had, in his own way, despite her best intentions. Feeling anything for Kaz Brekker was the worst kind of foolishness, she knew that. But he'd been the one to rescue her, to see her potential. He'd bet on her and that meant something, even if he'd done it for his own selfish reasons. He'd even dubbed her the Wraith. I don't like it, she'd said. It makes me sound like a corpse. A phantom, he corrected. Didn't you just say I was to be your spider? Why not stick with that? Because there are plenty of spiders in the barrel. Besides, you want your enemies to be afraid, not think they can squash you with the toe of one boot. My enemies? Our enemies. He'd helped her build a legend to wear as armor, something bigger and more frightening than the girl she'd been. Inej sighed. She didn't want to think about Kaz anymore. Talk, she said to Nina. Your eyelids are drooping. You should sleep. Don't like boats. Bad memories. Me too. Sing something, then. Nina laughed. Remember what I said about wishing you were dead? You do not want me to sing. Please. I only know Rovkin folk tunes and Kurtz drinking songs. Drinking song. Something rowdy, please. Nina snorted. Only for you, Wraith. She cleared her throat and began. My young captain, bold on the sea, soldier and sailor and free of disease. Inej started to giggle and clutched her side. You're right. You couldn't carry a tune in a bucket. I told you that. Go on. Nina's voice really was terrible. But it helped to keep Inej on this boat. In this moment. She didn't want to think about the last time she'd been at sea. But the memories were hard to fight. She wasn't even supposed to be in the wagon the morning the slavers took her. She'd been 14, and her family had been summering on the coast of West Ravka, enjoying the seaside and performing in a carnival on the outskirts of Oskarvo. She should have been helping her father mend the nets. But she'd been feeling lazy, and she'd allowed herself another few minutes to sleep in, drowsing beneath the thin cotton covers and listening to the rush and sigh of the waves. When a man had appeared silhouetted in the door to the caravan, she hadn't even known to run. She'd simply said, Five more minutes, Papa. Then they had her by the legs and were dragging her out of the wagon. She banged her head hard on the ground. There were four of them, big men, seafarers. When she tried to scream, they gagged her. They bound her hands and wrists, and one of them threw her over his shoulder as they plunged into a longboat they'd moored in the cove. Later, Inej learned that the coast was a popular location for slavers. They'd spotted the Suli caravan from their ship and rowed in after dawn when the camp was all but deserted. The rest of the journey was a blur. She was thrown into a cargo hold with a group of other children, some older, some younger, mostly girls, but a few boys, too. She was the only Suli, but a few spoke Rovkin, and they told her their own stories of being taken. One had been snatched from his father's shipyard. another had been playing in the tide pools, and had strayed too far from her friends. One had been sold by her older brother to pay off his gambling debts. The sailors spoke a language she didn't know, but one of the other children claimed they were being taken to the largest of Kerch's outer islands, where they would be auctioned to private owners, or pleasure houses in Ketterdam and Novia Zem. People came from all over the world to bid. Anech had thought that slaving was illegal in Kerch, but apparently it still happened. She never saw the auction block. When they'd finally dropped anchor, Inej was led on deck and handed over to one of the most beautiful women she'd ever seen. A tall blonde with hazel eyes and piles of golden hair. The woman had held her lantern up and examined every inch of Inej, her teeth, her breasts, even her feet. She'd tugged on the matted hair on Inej's head. "This will have to be shaved." Then she'd stepped back. "Pretty," she said. "Scrawny and flat as a pan, but her skin is flawless." She'd turned away to barter with the sailors as Inej stood there, clutching her bound hands over her chest, her blouse still open, her skirt still hiked around her waist. Inej could see the glint of moonlight off the waves of the cove. "Jump," she thought. "Whatever waits at the bottom of the sea is better than where this woman is taking you." But she hadn't had the courage. The girl she'd become would have jumped without a second thought, and maybe taken one of the slavers down with her. Or maybe she was kidding herself. She'd frozen when Tanta Helene had accosted her in West Stave. She'd been no stronger, no braver. Just the same frightened Sully girl who'd been paralyzed and humiliated on the deck of that ship. Nina was still singing something about a sailor who'd abandoned his sweetheart. "Teach me the chorus," Inej said. "You should rest." "Chorus." So Nina taught her the words, and they sang together, fumbling through the verses, hopelessly out of key, until the lanterns burned low.
17. Jesper. Jesper felt about ready to hurl himself overboard just for a change in routine. 6 more days. 6 more days on this boat, if they were lucky and the wind was good. And then they should make land. Fjerda's western coast was all perilous rock and steep cliffs. It could only be safely approached at Jerholm and Elling. And since security at both harbors was tight, they'd been forced to travel all the way to the northern whaling ports. He was secretly hoping they'd be attacked by pirates, but the little ship was too small to be carrying valuable cargo. They were an unworthy target, and they passed unmolested through the busiest trade routes of the true sea, flying neutral Kerch colors. Soon, they were in the cold waters of the north, moving into the Isenvee. Jesper prowled the deck, climbed the rigging, tried to get the crew to play cards with him, cleaned his guns. He missed land and good food and better lager. He missed the city. If he'd wanted wide open spaces and silence, he would have stayed on the frontier and become the farmer his father had hoped for. There was little to do on the ship but study the layout of the ice court, listen to Matthias grumbling, and annoy Wylan, who could always be found laboring over his attempts to reconstruct the possible mechanisms of the Ringwall gates. Kaz had been impressed with the sketches. "You think like a lockpick," he'd told Wylan. "I do not. I mean, you can see space along 3 axes. "I'm not a criminal," Wylan protested. Kaz had cast him an almost pitying look. "No. You're a flautist who fell in with bad company." Jesper sat down next to Wylan. "Just learn to take a compliment. Kaz doesn't hand them out often." "It's not a compliment. I'm nothing like him. I don't belong here." "No arguments from me. And you don't belong here either." "I beg your pardon, Merchling."
We don't need a sharpshooter for Kaz's plan, so what's your job, other than stalking around making everyone antsy? He shrugged. Kaz trusts me. Weiland snorted and picked up his pin. Sure about that? Jesper shifted uncomfortably. Of course he wasn't sure about it. He spent far too much of his time guessing at Kaz Brekker's thoughts. And if he had earned some small part of Kaz's trust, did he deserve it? He tapped his thumbs against his revolvers and said, "When the bullets start flying, you may find I'm nice to have around. Those pretty pictures aren't going to keep you alive. We need these plans. And in case you've forgotten, one of my flash bombs helped get us out of the Ketterdam Harbor." Jesper blew out a breath. Brilliant strategy. It worked, didn't it? You blinded our guys right along with the black tips. It was a calculated risk. It was cross your fingers and hope for the best. Believe me, I know the difference. So I've heard. Meaning? Meaning, everyone knows you can't keep away from a fight or a wager, no matter the odds. Jesper squinted up at the sails. If you aren't born with every advantage, you learn to take your chances. I wasn't, Weiland left off and set down his pen. Why do you think you know everything about me? I know plenty, Merchling. How nice for you. I feel like I'll never know enough. About what? About anything, Weiland muttered. Against his better judgment, Jesper was intrigued. Like what? He pressed. Well, like those guns, he said, gesturing to Jesper's revolvers. They have an unusual firing mechanism, don't they? If I could take them apart, don't even think about it. Weiland shrugged. Or, what about the ice moat? He said, tapping the plan of the ice court. Matthias had said the moat wasn't solid. Only a slick, wafer-thin layer of ice over frigid water. Thoroughly exposed and impossible to cross. What about it? Where does all the water come from? The court is on a hill, so where's the aquifer or aqueduct to bring the water up? Doesn't matter. There's a bridge. We don't need to cross the ice moat. But aren't you curious? Saints, no. Get me a system for winning at three-man bramble or mocker's wheel. That I'm curious about. Weiland had turned back to his work, his disappointment obvious. For some reason, Jesper felt a little disappointed, too. Jesper checked on Inej every morning and every night. The idea that the ambush on the docks might simply be the end of her had shaken him. Despite Nina's efforts, he'd been fairly sure that the Wraith wasn't long for this world. But one morning, Jesper arrived to find Inej sitting up, clothed in breeches, quilted vest, and hooded tunic. Nina was bent over, struggling to get the Suli girl's feet into her strange rubber-soled slippers. Inej, Jesper crowed. You're not dead. She smiled faintly. No more than anyone. If you're spouting depressing Suli wisdom, then you must be feeling better. Don't just stand there, Nina groused. Help me get these things on her feet. If you would just let me, Inej began. Do not bend, Nina snapped. Do not leap. Do not move abruptly. If you don't promise to take it easy, I'll slow your heart and keep you in a coma until I can be sure you've recovered fully. Nina Zenik, as soon as I figure out where you've put my knives, we're going to have words. The first ones had better be, thank you, oh great Nina, for dedicating every waking moment of this miserable journey to saving my sorry life. Jesper expected Inej to laugh, and was startled when she took Nina's face between her hands and said, thank you for keeping me in this world when fate seemed determined to drag me to the next. I owe you a life debt. Nina blushed deeply. I was teasing Inej. She paused. I think we've both had enough of debts. This is one I'm glad to bear. Okay, okay. When we're back in Ketterdam, take me out for waffles. Now Inez did laugh. She dropped her hands and appeared to speculate. Dessert for a life. I'm not sure that seems equitable. I expect really good waffles. I know just the place, said Jesper. They have this apple syrup. You're not invited, Nina said. Now come help me get her standing. I can stand on my own, Inez grumbled as she slid off the table and rose to her feet. Humor me. With a sigh, Inez gripped the arm that Jesper offered, and they made their way out of the cabin and up to the deck, Nina trailing behind them. This is foolishness, Inez said. I'm fine. You are, replied Jesper. But I may keel over at any moment, so pay attention. Once they were on deck, Inez squeezed his arm to get him to halt. She tilted her head back, breathing deeply. It was a stone gray day. The sea, a bleak slate, broken up by whitecaps. The sky pleated with thick ripples of cloud. A hard wind filled the sails, carrying the little boat over the waves. It feels good to be this kind of cold, she murmured. This kind? Wind in your hair, sea spray on your skin. The cold of the living. 2 turns around the deck, Nina warned. Then back to bed. She went to join Wylan at the stern. It didn't escape Jesper that she'd moved to the point on the ship farthest from Matthias. Have they been like that the whole time? Inej asked, looking between Nina and the Fjordan. Jesper nodded. It's like watching 2 bobcats circle each other. Inej made a little humming noise. But what do they mean to do when they pounce? Claw each other to death? Inez rolled her eyes. No wonder you do so badly at the tables. Jesper steered her toward the rail, where they could make an approximation of a promenade without getting in anyone's way. I'd threaten to toss you into the drink, but Kaz is watching. Inez nodded. She didn't look up to where Kaz stood beside Specht at the wheel, but Jesper did and gave him a cheery wave. Kaz's expression didn't change. Would it kill him to smile every once in a while? Jesper asked. Very possibly. Every crew member called greetings and well wishes, and Jesper could sense Inej perking up with every cheer of "The Wraith Returns." Even Matthias gave her an awkward bow and said, I understand you're the reason we made it out of the harbor alive. I suspect there were a lot of reasons, said Inej. I'm a reason, Jesper offered helpfully. All the same, said Matthias, ignoring him. Thank you. They moved on, and Jesper saw a pleased grin playing over Inej's lips. Surprised? He asked. A bit, she admitted. I spend so much time with Kaz, I guess. It's a novelty to feel appreciated. She released a little chuckle and pressed a hand to her side. Still hurts to laugh. They're glad you're alive. I'm glad. I should hope so. I think I just never quite felt like I fit in with the dregs. Well, you don't. Thanks. We're a crew with limited interests, and you don't gamble, swear, or drink to excess. But here's the secret to popularity. Risk death to save your compatriots from being blown to bits in an ambush? Great way to make friends. As long as I don't have to start going to parties. When they reached the foredeck, Inej leaned on the railing and looked out at the horizon. Did he come to see me at all? Jesper knew she meant Kaz. Every day. Inej turned her dark eyes on him, then shook her head. You can't read people, and you can't bluff. Jesper sighed. He hated disappointing anyone. No, he admitted. She nodded and looked back at the ocean. I don't think he likes sick beds, Jesper said. Who does? I mean, I think it was hard for him to be around you that way. That first day, when you were hurt, he went a little crazy. It cost Jesper something to admit that. Would Kaz have gone off on that kind of mad dog tear if it had been Jesper with a knife stuck in his side? Of course he did. This is a 6-person job, and apparently he needs me to scale an incinerator shaft. If I die, the plan falls apart. Jesper didn't argue. He couldn't pretend to understand Kaz or what drove him. Tell me something. What was the big falling out between Wylan and his father? Inej cast a quick glance up at Kaz, then looked over her shoulder to make sure none of the crew was lurking nearby. Kaz had been clear that information even remotely related to the job must be kept among the 6 of them. I don't know exactly, she said. 3 months ago, Wylan turned up at a flop house near the slat. He was using a different surname, but Kaz keeps tabs on everyone new to the barrel, so he had me do some snooping. And? Inez shrugged. The servants at the Van Eck house are paid well enough that they're hard to bribe. The information I got didn't add up to much. There were rumors Wylan had been caught in a sweaty romp with one of his tutors. Really? Said Jesper incredulously. Hidden depths indeed. Just a rumor. And it's not as if Wylan left home to take up residence with a lover. So why did Papa Van Eck kick him out? I don't think he did. Van Eck writes to Wylan every week, and Wylan doesn't even open the letters. What do they say? Inez leaned back carefully on the railing. You're assuming I read them. You didn't? Of course I did. Then she frowned, remembering. They just said the same thing again and again. If you're reading this, then you know how much I wish to have you home. Or, I pray that you read these words and think of all you've left behind. Jesper looked over to where Wylan was chatting with Nina. The mysterious Merchling. I wonder what Van Eck did that was bad enough to send Wylan to slum it with us. Now you tell me something, Jesper. What brought you on this mission? You know how risky this job is. What the chances are that we'll come back. I know you love a challenge, but this is a stretch, even for you. Jesper looked at the gray swells of the sea, marching to the horizon in endless formation. He'd never liked the ocean. The sense of the unknown beneath his feet, that something hungry and full of teeth might be waiting to drag him under. And that was how he felt every day now, even on land. I'm in debt, Inej. You're always in debt. No, it's bad this time. I borrowed money from the wrong people. You know, my father has a farm? In Novia Zem. Yes, in the West. It just started turning a profit this year. Oh, Jesper, you didn't. I needed the loan. I told him it's so I can finish my degree at the university. She stared at him. He thinks you're a student? That's why I came to Ketterdam. My first week in the city, I went down to East Stabe with some other students. I put a few Kruger on the table. It was a whim. I didn't even know the rules of Mocker's Wheel. But when the dealer gave the wheel a spin, I'd never heard a more beautiful sound. I won, and I kept winning. It was the best night of my life. And you've been chasing it ever since. He nodded. I should have stayed in the library. I won, I lost some more. I needed money, so I started taking on work with the gangs. 2 guys jumped me in an alley one night. Kaz took them down, and we started doing jobs together. He probably hired those boys to attack you so you'd feel indebted to him. He wouldn't. Jesper stopped short. And then he laughed. Of course he would. Jesper flexed his knuckles, concentrated on the lines of his palms. Kaz is... I don't know. He's like nobody else I've ever known. He surprises me. Yes, like a hive of bees in your dresser drawer. Jesper barked a laugh, just like that. So what are we doing here? Jesper turned back to the sea, feeling his cheeks heat. Hoping for honey, I guess, and praying not to get stung. Inej bumped her shoulder against his. Then at least we're both the same kind of stupid. I don't know what your excuse is, Wraith. I'm the one who can never walk away from a bad hand. She looped her arm in his. That makes you a rotten gambler, Jesper. But an excellent friend. You're too good for him, you know. I know. So are you. Shall we walk? Yes, Inez said, falling into step beside him. And then, I need you to distract Nina so I can go search for my knives. No problem. I'll just bring up Helvar. Jesper glanced back at the wheel as they set off down the opposite side of the deck. Kaz hadn't moved. He was still watching them, his eyes hard, his face as unreadable as ever.
18. Kaz. It took 2 days after she emerged from the surgeon's cabin for Kaz to make himself approach Inej. She was sitting by herself, legs crossed, back to the hull of the ship, sipping a cup of tea. Kaz limped over to her. I want to show you something.
I'm well, thank you for asking, she said, looking up at him. How are you?
He felt his lips twist.
Splendid. Awkwardly, he lowered himself down beside her and set aside his cane. Is your leg bad? It's fine. Here. He spread Weiland's drawing of the prison sector between them. Most of Weiland's plans showed the ice court from above, but the prison elevation was a side view. A cross-section showing the building's floors stacked on top of one another.
I've seen it, Inej said. She ran her fingers from the basement up to the roof in a straight line.
6 stories up a chimney.
Can he do it?
Her dark brows rose.
Is there another option?
No.
So if I say I can't make that climb, will you tell Spect to turn the boat around and take us back to Ketterdam?
I'll find another option, said Kaz. I don't know what, but I'm not going to give up that haul.
You know I can do it, Kaz. And you know I'm not going to refuse, so why ask?
Because I've been looking for an excuse to talk to you for 2 days. I want to make sure you know what you'll be dealing with and that you're studying the plans.
Will there be a test?
Yes, said Kaz. If you fail, we'll all end up stuck inside a Fjordan prison.
Hmm,
she said and took a sip of her tea.
And I'll end up dead. She closed her eyes and leaned her head back against the hull. I'm worried about the escape route to the harbor. I don't like that there's only one way out.
Kaz settled back against the hull, too.
Me neither, he conceded, stretching out his bad leg.
But that's why the Fjordans built it that way.
Do you trust Spect?
Kaz cast her a sideways glance. Is there a reason I shouldn't?
Not at all.
But if the Fairland isn't waiting for us in the harbor, I trust him enough.
He owes you?
Kaz nodded. He glanced around, then said, the Navy threw him out for insubordination and refused him his pension. He has a sister to support near Belent. I got him his money.
That was good of you.
Kaz narrowed his eyes. I'm not some character out of a children's story who plays harmless pranks and steals from the rich to give to the poor. There was money to be made and information to be had. Spect knows the Navy's roots like the back of his hand.
Never something for nothing, Kaz,
she said, her gaze steady.
I know. Still, if the Fairland is intercepted, we'll have no way out of your home.
I'll get us out. You know that.
Tell me you know that. He needed her to say it. This job wasn't like anything he'd attempted before. Every doubt she'd raised was a legitimate one and only echoed the fears in his own head. He'd snapped at her before they'd left Caterdam, told her he'd get a new spider for the job if she didn't think he could pull it off. He needed to know that she believed he could do this, that he could take them into the ice court and bring them out feeling whole and righteous the way he'd done with other crews on other jobs. He needed to know she believed in him. But all she said was, "I hear Pekka Rollins was the one gunning for us in the harbor." Kaz felt a surge of disappointment. "So? Don't think I haven't noticed the way you go after him, Kaz." "He's just another boss, one more barrel thug." "No, he isn't. When you go after other gangs, it's business. But with Pekka Rollins, it's personal." Later, he wasn't sure why he said it. He never told anyone, never spoken the words aloud, but now Kaz kept his eyes on the sails above them and said, "Pekka Rollins killed my brother." He didn't have to see Inez's face to sense her shock. "You had a brother?"
"I had a lot of things," he muttered.
"I'm sorry." Had he wanted her sympathy? Was that why he told her? "Kaz," she hesitated. What would she do now? Try to lay a comforting hand on his arm? Tell him she understood? "I'll pray for him," Inez said. "For peace in the next world, if not in this one." He turned his head. They were sitting close together, their shoulders nearly touching. Her eyes were so brown, they were almost black. And for once, her hair was down. She always wore it tied back in a ruthlessly tight coil. Even the idea of being this near someone should have set his skin crawling. Instead, he thought, "What happens if I move closer?"
"I don't want your prayers," he said.
"What do you want, then?"
The old answers came easily to mind. Money, vengeance. Geordi's voice in my head silenced forever. But a different reply roared to life inside him, loud, insistent, and unwelcome.
"You, Inej. You."
He shrugged and turned away. "To die buried under the weight of my own gold." Inej sighed.
"Then I'll pray you get all you ask for."
"More prayers?" he asked. "And what do you want, Wraith?"
"To turn my back on Caterdam and never hear that name again."
"Good. You'd need to find a new spider, but he'd be rid of this distraction." "Your share of 30 million Kruger can grant that wish." He pushed to his feet. "So save your prayers for good weather and stupid guards. Just leave me out of it." Kaz limped to the bow, annoyed with himself and angry with Inej. Why had he sought her out? Why had he told her about Geordi? He'd been irritable and unfocused for days. He was used to having his wraith around, feeding the crows outside his window, sharpening her knives while he worked at his desk, chastising him with her Suli proverbs. He didn't want Inej. He just wanted their routine back. Kaz leaned against the ship's railing. He wished he hadn't said anything about his brother. Even those few words raised the memories, clamoring for attention. What had he said to Giles at the exchange? "I'm the kind of bastard they only manufacture in the barrel." One more lie. One more piece of the myth he'd built for himself. After their father died, crushed beneath a plow with his inside strewn across a field like a trail of damp red blossoms, Geordi had sold the farm. Not for much. The debts and liens had seen to that. But it was enough to see them safe to Caterdam and to keep them in modest comfort for a good while. Kaz had been 9, still missing Da and frightened of traveling from the only home he'd ever known. He'd held tight to his big brother's hand as they journeyed through miles of sweet, rolling countryside until they reached one of the major waterways
and hopped a bog boat that carried produce